We're so glad you've chosen GoldSeek.com Radio as a top source for business and investing information. Today's featured guest, the Wall Street Whiz Kid, Peter Grandich. With gold up 10% and silver about 12% from the reaction lows, today's featured guest joins me with his outlook on the sector. For over 25 years, Peter Grandich has published commentary on the mining and metals markets and is editor of the Grandich Letter. Welcome back, Peter Grandich.
Always a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Let's begin the discussion, if we could, today with news regarding the world's most powerful economic position here. The current Federal Reserve Chairman Ben S. Bernanke is expected to retire in the next few months. And last week, a newspaper in Japan announced an inside story that Dr. Larry Summers would accept the offer from the administration there for the position. But in an abrupt change of pace, Summers rejected the offer this weekend, as well as Timothy Geithner. And it appears that Fed Chair Janet Yellen is now the key candidate. Given her dovish comments and track record, do you agree that this bodes well for inflation hedges like precious metals?
I think it's not so much that it bodes well that it takes a potential big negative away. I think there would have been a pretty good argument he would have been a net negative for gold, at least in the very short term. I think that was something that's been removed. I don't know if her appointment brings any real buy-in into gold simply because somehow a belief she will be. I think so much rest now for gold on the next 24 to 48 hours of what we see, if any, on the tapering. I think much of what I think the tapering is going to be is baked into the price. So I'm not too concerned that there's going to be a dramatic sell-off in gold if the tapering actually takes place this coming Wednesday. My bigger concern, and really the only real concern I have for gold right now, is the continuing mysterious selling at the worst time, at the worst possible ways of gold in the paper market, particularly now that it's taking place overseas. There's just no reason for this, and these type of things aren't some, you know, loose hair trader, some one person who doesn't know what they're doing. This has been, and in my mind, and I think many others, a concentrated effort to manipulate the price down. And the fact that they showed up again in the last couple weeks concerns me somewhat. Although I'm fairly certain that they don't have the power, or is the market as vulnerable as it was before.
Last week, Goldman Sachs, I'm sure you noticed, bashing the price of gold again, calling for $1,000 or maybe even below $1,000 an ounce, a laughable figure. Point to their previous bearish call on gold as one of the key factors that seemed to break investors' nerve. Read an article on Sunday evening pointing out that just as Goldman was making that announcement, they were accumulating a sizable position in GLD, the Street Tracks Gold ETF. I'd like your comments.
Well, we know history has shown, we don't have to go too back far, we only have to go back to the financial crisis, that Goldman tells its clients one thing and does another. So, you know, I don't be surprised at that. I do know that if you're anybody in the world to monetary political, you either worked for or will eventually work for Goldman Sachs. So you do have to pay attention. You just have to figure out, by the time they're telling the general public about something, what stage you in that move. And I'm going to say you're in the, you know, the latter stages. But it's still a concern of mine. No, sentiment is very poor because even myself, someone who believes that the fundamentals are roaring bullish, still feels like he's being prodded with a electronic prod when we see these markets, you know, suddenly fall $20 on contracts trading at times. With anybody with a right mind who took any trading course at all would know that that is not a good time or a way, in a manner to move a price if you're really looking for a good price. So it's clearly been done to create some type of fear or some type of concern, you know, and I just feel that it doesn't have the sustaining power that it did because the market's in much better shape than it was 12 or 18 months ago.
Well, you know, the economic numbers are somewhat mixed with, I guess you'd say, a positive slant, but it might not be ample enough to prompt the Fed into tapering. The number of Americans seeking jobless benefits did fall below 300,000. That's the first time in about 7 years. Initial claims dropped by over 30,000. And that's according to the Labor Department on Thursday of last week. You know, employment, a key factor cited by Fed officials for determining their QE policy. I'm viewing the odds of tapering this week as a bit lower, maybe 50-50 at best. Should the Fed, though, pull the trigger, my feeling here is we might see a brief market reaction, and that would set the stage for a capitulation that could lead to the next rebound. If the Fed doesn't taper, my guess is that might be all that's required for a retest of our resistance levels at 1525 gold and 26 silver.
Well, I think they're tapering. I don't think there's any question that they're suddenly not going to not do anything, because it would put them in a very bad light. They may moderate what their original thoughts were, and they may not be anywhere as steep, and I think the market would react positive to that. But my whole scenario that I've had in my mind that I've shared with my readers is that the Federal Reserve is going to taper while the economy actually gets worse off, and then eventually will suddenly be put under pressure to not only end the tapering, but come up with another gimmick of some type of easing, because the economy and the job situation will have really fallen off the cliff. And I see that in the first quarter of next year. And that's when, and only then is when I've told my readers quite some time that I felt that there'd be a significant sell-off in the U.S. equity market, because then it would be perceived that they're behind the curve and they're no longer an insurance that stocks really can't go down as long as the Fed is on your side. So whether there's a $20 billion or a $5 billion, I think much of it is baked. I think we just need to get through it. The only shock, like I said, would be something bigger than people imagine, and I think that would hit the gold market. But outside of that, I do think the scenario you painted is quite possible, that whatever it is very short-term, and then there's a move to the upside because it's out of the way. And it's very important now to remember that we're now going to be in a very seasonally favorable period for gold through November. This is when jewelry fabricators worldwide use the most gold that they have for their needs to, you know, to make steel, one of the most significant things, usage of gold, and that's for jewelry. And so I think with all that in mind, and that we're seeing, and I think it's kind of important, although we've all been beaten up if we've been in the juniors, I think we're also starting to see some, you know, relative strength in the significant mining shares, that even with gold down last week, we saw many of them, you know, hold their own, or if they did decline, they declined much less than the percentage in the metals. And I just think the market is sold out. I don't think it's yet there to drive it up a lot, but I just don't think we're going to see another big decline like we saw earlier this year, no matter what the Fed does.
I was actually reviewing last night the mining sector relative to 2000, I want to say in two. We're approaching on the XAU numbers that we haven't seen, maybe, but close to 10 years ago, the XAU was near these capitulation lows here. I think at some point, this absolute distaste for the sector is going to reverse in a big way, because I find it difficult to believe that the mining sector, despite of increased oil and energy expenses that obviously are weighing heavily on them, that these miners are in toto worth the same as investors viewed them 10 years ago, given a $1,200, $1,300 gold price. That just does not seem to make any logical sense in any scenario that I can come up with. I'd like your comments.
Well, that is, and that is the main argument to own them now. It's difficult for those of us who spend a lot of time in the metals market, because we suffered through what I've called the worst bear market in my 30 years, because the metal prices are so much higher. No one could have ever imagined that you'd be 10 or 15 years ago that someone would tell you gold was even $1,200 and somehow you would lost 50 or 80% on mining stocks. It would just be just something you couldn't fathom. We used to pray to God it would just get above 400. So I just think, like I said, I think things are washed out. I don't know yet if there's enough there to sustain a rally and keep it up unless gold gets, like you said, above the 1550. I think that's the game changer. We're going to need to get above the big crack below 1550 to really get the market moving again. But first things first, I do think we need to retake back where we were in the last few weeks after this Fed news. I think the next few days after the Fed announcement will go a long way and tell us whether or not this gold market is indeed washed out. And like I said, unless there's something very bad on the tapering news, bigger than expected, I think the surprise will be to the upside, not to the downside.
No, it's a good point. And, you know, Bank of Japan, well known for its dovish ways, you might even say the original dove, beginning quantitative easing and money printing long before it even had the technical term QE. Well over two decades ago, they're maintaining the BOJ, their dovish ways. I'm sure you saw recently in past few weeks here, the ECB and the Bank of England also maintaining low interest rate levels and very little talk of ending stimulus. It would really be, as you say, a sea change or game changing moment if we do see that. And one really wonders if this nascent economic recovery would continue in this fashion and whether or not the housing market would suffer tremendously, which I think is one of the remaining legs of this domestic economic table here.
I've never seen or believed that we've had an economic recovery. What I just think is the severity was lessened. I don't know of any group, and I have different businesses, so I get to speak to people different parts of the country, and I don't know anybody that's seen a sustained, strong economy. We certainly came way off the depths in some housing markets like Vegas and down in Florida, but to say that there's true economic expansion, we haven't even seen it in the employment numbers. We don't have to rehash stuff, but we know the numbers have been really bad. You know, we're seeing most of the workers in part-time. We're seeing no increase in income itself. We're seeing the few rich get richer, but the rest of the people falling below what they made 5 or 10 or 15 years ago. So there's been no real economic recovery. I don't like that word. I just think we've seen the lesson of the decline. And if you think about it, when you think about how much more debt we've increased just to have this economic recovery, if that's what it takes, don't spend another dollar because it's not worth it. The bottom line is that I just think another sea change that's happened, and there hasn't been a lot of talk about this because we've all been under siege in the metals market, but another change that has not played into the metals market in quite some time, but I think it's creeping back in, particularly from foreign investors, and that is political concerns. I think, you know, it appears the emperor has no clothes in the United States. The love that the world and Americans had in general for Obama and thought he could be a great leader, I think, is gone. I think his death blow was his poorly handling of the Syrian situation. And I think that, believe it or not, becomes a supporting factor as we go into the new year for gold, that there will be more and more political instability, and America is not viewed as a country in itself that can really handle itself on the world stage anymore. And I just think that's something that's going to become more spoken of, because unfortunately, the situation may not be in the news at the moment because of Syria, but everything that was taking place a week ago in terms of the civil war and all didn't stop. And all the problems in that whole region hasn't stopped. And that's why I think when you get outside of North America and you talk to, and I do talk to investors or hear from investors, or at least make sure that I read what investors are thinking in the Far East and in Europe, and that's why I don't read the publications here, but I read the publications that have come from those areas of the world. Many of them continue to believe gold is a worthy asset to own, both for political reasons, economic, inflation, and just as a pure investment. And that's why I just don't think we should be fearful that there's a couple hundred dollars or these numbers. You know, every time this seller shows up, they also follow up with the story about how we're going down to 1,000 or 800 and so forth. And what simply amazes me, and I got to add this, is the multiple of stories that come out on down days, and almost impossible to find a bullish story on the few up days in gold, just as another indication that, you know, the market is just so overly done bearish.
You know, you're really lecturing the faculty there with regard to the recovery. It really does require a different moniker. When you remove the bogus inflation numbers, then you get the true GDP deflator. And then when you have a accurate GDP to work with, economic growth in the United States for more than a decade, one could even argue the year 2000, if you use John Williams' numbers from shadowstats.com, is flat to negative. Add that together with the bogus unemployment numbers, and you go back and you use the 1980s U6 figure, the dichotomy between the actual numbers and what appears to be the real numbers. And I would also point out that right now, according to the Census Bureau, 147 million people are either at or near the poverty level. That's roughly half the United States. We just inched even higher to 48 million now on the SNAP's food stamp program, a shocking number, which means you'd have 48 million Americans wrapped around food pantries, soup kitchens. You could probably wrap every major city several times with the number of people who would be requesting handouts if it wasn't for the food stamp programs. But I also wanted to address one other just brief thing here. This is not a political venue, and I certainly do not take any stance because I'm frankly just not interested in partisan politics. I was very impressed with the current administration resetting one of the, I think, most important precedents that we've had in this country since the first president, George Washington, took the oath of office. And that was the president put the bid for war in Syria in front of Congress for approval. But other administrations changed that precedent in, let's say, the past decade or so. And that, I think, was a frightening shift of events that could lead ultimately to an overthrow of the country, a coup, or even a dictatorship. The current administration did put it before Congress and give the people at least some say in whether or not we're going to be in perpetual warfare in true Orwellian fashion. And unless you want to comment on that, I'd like to move on to the next question here. You know, in geopolitical news, you mentioned that the Syrian issue is no longer such a big deal. We saw the Russian President Putin send an envoy this weekend to discuss the chemical weapons that apparently America was so concerned about. And apparently they've agreed to hand over their weapons. So at least for the time being, you know, we're not seeing as much concern there. Would you like to make any comments on that geopolitical situation before we move on?
Well, I'll just say that you may not be seeing it, but everything that was taking place leading up to it hasn't changed. And that's why eventually that part of the world will come back as a news event. It may not come back as a chemical weapon event, but the fact of what's happening in the Civil War and how it can play out geopolitically in that region hasn't gone away.
You know, last week we heard a interesting story that I've seen virtually nothing in the mainstream news, that the nation of Poland, its government, seized up to half of pension funds in Cyprus-like fashion. The trend in bail-in seems to be gaining some momentum here, but hardly making, as I said, the headline news. Should investors be concerned? And if so, what measures do you think they should take to insulate their portfolios from the ramifications of these future government-sponsored capital raids?
Well, again, I just think it goes back to those who argue ownership of assets that you can control and have are always better than being stored away somewhere and you're left in terms of a paper understanding that it's yours. Possession is the old nine-tenths of a rule. So in terms of bullion, it certainly argues the physical bullion ownership. It also argues that, you know, we can't, while I don't think it's something that's coming anytime soon, we can't just simply assume what happens there can't happen here. You have to be on guard for it. And if something like that does give you sleepless nights and all, then you have to look at ways that could, you know, eliminate or lessen that opportunity. And what that would include is diversification and not having all of one's assets in any one currency or in any one country.
You know, the list of countries demanding the repatriation of their sovereign gold reserves is growing. First, it was Germany. I'm sure you'll remember Venezuela, Switzerland, and even Mexico. This was another little anecdotal story. The state of Texas was even inquiring with the Federal Reserve that it would like the return of its funds that apparently were on deposit at the New York Fed. Well, this week and last week, two more countries, Finland and Poland, last week, a growing outcry from its populace and growing movements from both countries to restore their sovereign gold stockpiles. What do you think?
Well, again, that's what always takes us back to what I felt that this whole 18 months or 2 years of severe decline in gold, given the fact that it came on the heels of what originally was the most startling news, that Germany first couldn't even see its gold, and then it agreed to only take a small percentage of it back over, you know, a seven-year period. If you would have told me this story 5 or 10 years ago and then said, Peter, if we were having this interview 5 or 10 years ago and you said you saw the future, this is a story, what do you think happened next to gold? I would have told you it would have doubled or tripled, and yet it went down, you know. So I just think it's more of a concern for us to think there's a smoking gun out there, that all the gold that's supposed to have been and the things that Gatter and others have argued for years is correct, and that someday we're going to wake up to it and it's all going to come apart, and when it does, the price will be dramatically higher. I mean, it's just no reason now that for so many countries to want to do that if there really was a true safe sense that they felt that everything was right. And, you know, again, this is the argument of those, and then when we see these strange trading patterns, and therefore they try to create a sense of the opposite, I think we have to be really concerned about this news, and it's just more evidence to what I and you and I and some others believe will eventually be the unearthing that all the gold that's supposedly out there isn't, and so many people have so many different calls on it that in and itself, like the derivative world, is going to be a major problem.
Think of the nightly news, television, stock talk is usually at the top of the subject list we see there. Every now and then, maybe gold and silver make the conversation, but usually in a derisive manner, suggesting that, well, the bubble has popped. But then, you know, any serious student, I think, of financial history knows that few bubbles end without significant public participation. And sources show right now, more than 1 out of 2 Americans own equities. They have stocks in some fashion, in some manner. They may have a stock participation program at their employer, but roughly half of Americans, actually a bit more. The top 3 figures suggest that less than 5% have any meaningful precious metals investment. So there are roughly 10 stockholders for every gold and silver investor. That is far from a bubble, and I'd like your thoughts about just how long this myth can persist regarding a precious metals bubble.
Well, it's not so much that. It's the tens of billions of dollars spent over decades by financial institutions to keep the game of stocks and bonds going and to make it a myth that if you even consider gold, that you know you're one of these tinfoil hats or one of these end of the world people, that would be the only reason you would want to own it. Let's face facts. If gold does really, really well, it's because stocks and bonds aren't, and vice versa. So you can't expect the 99.9% of the people who make their living selling stocks and bonds to support the notion of owning gold. So you're just never going to get general financial institutions or their sales force suggesting people to own it. The important point of what the point you brought out is to say that it's been in a bubble when so few people own it is kind of silly in itself. But it's kind of silly in itself, the general reaping on gold. You know, it was a stealth bull market. Look, we went up for 12 years in a row, and only when on one particular day when there was a big number was there even any reporting of it. Can you imagine if the stock market went up for 12 years in a row, how many reports we would read about it? So you always have to keep in mind that gold is a hated investment. It is never going to be portrayed in a positive light, not only by the financial institutions, but most of the media that make their living off those financial institutions. and to say that anything's in a bubble. But I think it's also important to make a note that you made some talk about how bad the United States off is, how few people have real money, and what are they buying? They're buying stocks. Yet, where people are making money in the world, particularly China, they're waiting online to buy gold. You know, those people buying gold or the people here. And, you know, I kind of would go anywhere where the people that are making money are the people that I would say are somewhat smarter. So I just don't buy the bubble stuff. But again, it's more of the propaganda that's floated out there. And you got to remember that propaganda is always going to be there because 99.9% of the people in the financial world don't want to see gold up.
You know, demand for precious metals remain red hot. The U.S. Mint sales of silver coins setting records again this year. 33 million ounces, that's over 1,000 tons, matching the 2012 already, the total year sales. Perth Mint, Royal Canadian Mint, and the Australian Mints are all set for records or near record sales again this year. About 144% jump in gold maple leaf sales in Canada. That's quite a surge, plus a 60% surge in their silver maple leafs. You add it all together, we're seeing record demand in China, particularly at the Shanghai Exchange. We're seeing record volumes. We still see strong and solid premiums over the typical gold price between Shanghai and the London exchanges. Even India's total imports have more than doubled, climbing to 3,000 tons in anticipation, of course, of the upcoming seasons that we have that you alluded to earlier. We have, of course, Christmas, Hanukkah, and many of the Indian festivals and many other seasons as well coming up. So it's a generally positive period. When you take a look at all this, I'd appreciate your perspective as an investor who I'm sure was trading through or at least monitoring very closely the last precious metals bull market of the 70s. Did we see record demand around the world from the consumer as gold plummeted from its 850 zenith? Or is it different this time around? In other words, do you see similarities or parallels between 1980 and today? Or is this just the early or middle innings?
The 1980s was a paper-driven market, nor was there a huge drive up in physical demand when it rose, nor was there an exodus of mass quantities of physical gold sold to drive it down. It was a paper-driven market. The difference is, and that's why many of us have remained confident long-term, is that the underpinning has always been what the physical market does. And during these declines, the physical purchasing went up, not down. And that's always been my argument. When you look at real sell-offs in other markets, most recently, let's just look at, you know, the real estate market. When the housing market went bad, people weren't using the decline in the price of homes to buy more homes. They were just selling at whatever they can get it for. There was just sellers, no buyers. Same thing when we had gas shortages. You had a big car with a big engine, try selling it. When gold declined from 2011 to most recently, despite the decline, we saw demand for gold going up. And that just doesn't happen in a market that's, you know, set to go, you know, lower and lower and lower. So I think one other point before we run out of time, I think, again, this is something that's not been taken into account because those who have remained in the gold market have just been so beaten up this last 12 to 18 months. It's been hard to hold on to anything, and that's part of the purpose of this manipulation, to get you to the point and feel that there is no hope. But another thing that came out a month or so ago when the World Gold Council put out their numbers, which I thought was a startling piece of information, it's there for everybody to see, and that is they looked at worldwide gold production. And if you took away what the ETFs sold last year, were net sellers of, gold production versus demand would have fallen by, would have not been met by almost 35%. So that means if we didn't have the exchange traded funds selling, demand for gold could have not been met by current gold production. And so I believe we've seen the leveling off. I don't think we're seeing the selling hard anymore of the exchange traded funds, yet we know gold production is not going up and demand has remained constant. So what is meeting that, you know, what is meeting that difference? Where is it coming from? It's this paper market that, but demand is as strong as ever. And that just isn't a market and doesn't happen in a market that's truly in a bear market, but really is in a market that's being manipulated. And eventually all markets that are manipulated, as hard as this is to imagine, but it goes back to tulips or what have you. Eventually, when markets are manipulated, the manipulators finally can't keep the manipulation going. And when it caves in, if it was pushed to the upside like the tulips, was a collapse. And in this case, when something's being suppressed and the lid is finally blown off, well, then the prices just make up for lost time.
And on that excellent note, why don't we wrap up today? Please tell folks more about the Grandich Letter, how they can contact you.
It's simple. It's Grandich.com, G-R-A-N-D-I-C-H.com. We talk about general markets, obviously gold, and also we're a compensated consultant to junior mining companies.
Very good. As always, we appreciate your thoughts.
Thank you.